listening to 15 Minutes with Mark Wade, with your host, Daphna Pleben, and Grandmama Wade's favorite comics writer, Mark Wade.
Say something deep and significant.
Okay, how's this? What do you think? 4 score and 7 years ago.
Okay, let's see.
Hi, I'm Mark Wade, and I'm here with our editorial assistant,
Daphna Pleben.
And we're here to inaugurate the Wade Blog Podcasts. What are we talking about today?
Anything you don't actually want to type.
Excellent. Okay. One of the things I would like to talk about, because it's pertinent to what we've been doing with the blog, is we are launching Potter's Field. Well, we're not launching Potter's Field. We are relaunching Potter's Field in March with a number one. Potter's Field, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, is a series I did last year with an artist named Paul Azaceta, who's terrific.
Awesome. He's like really awesome.
He's really good.
Gorgeous.
And it's a detective series. It's a bit of a stretch for me, but that's okay. I mean, I always have been fond of detective stories. I've always been fond of investigative stuff. And the concept I've had sitting around in the back of my head for about 10 years, I came up with it when I was living in Brooklyn. And Jimmy Palmiotti, the inker, writer, was over at my house one day, and we were just talking about stuff in general, and it was just brought up in conversation. Hey, did you know that there's an island, in the East River where New York buries its anonymous dead? You know, the people who can't be traced, the people who are disfigured or don't have identification, or the homeless or infants or what have you. People who, those who cannot be identified through normal means, they're buried by the hundreds out there. And I just thought that was fascinating and creepy. And at that point, I had an idea for a series about a guy who goes among those graves one by one and has decided no one should die without a name. So he's going to go to every single grave on Hart Island and just do his investigation and figure out what these people were doing before they died, how they died, what went on, and give them some sense of identity and then move on to the next grave. I like the basic concept because it's, first of all, it allows me to do a bunch of different kind of stories, because it's really about it's really the story of the dead person continued on to, like, what unresolved issues do they have? What vengeance needs to be meted out? What sort of unfinished business there is for that person?
And it's like the ghost without a ghost. It's a ghost story without actual supernatural
elements. See, this is good. You're very helpful here. This is great. So, yes, that's exactly what
it is. That's why they pay me the very meager bucks.
That's right. It's like a ghost story with flesh and blood people. I had the idea percolating around in the back of my head for a long time, and then in 2000, thereabouts, Kurt Busiek and Carl Kiesel and Barry Kitson and a bunch of us started up this comic book publishing company called Gorilla, which was a really good idea gone horribly, horribly, horribly wrong.
You guys put out some great books, though. Shock Rockets?
Shock Rockets is good.
I bought that stuff in the store, single issues.
That's where Empire came out the first time. That's where Section Zero, which was Carl Kiesel's book. George Perez came out with Crimson Plague. We got like 8 guys in the room, artists and writers, to make a little collaborative there and our little, cooperative there, if you will.
But with less granola, right?
But with less granola. And the one thing we really didn't take into account was that we all knew the creative and none of us really knew business. Go figure. So
awkward silence?
It was just – we lost so much money. It was phenomenal. I just don't know how we did it. The good news is if we'd only managed to stay in business another couple of months, we would have made every mistake that a publisher can possibly make, and we would have been in a position where we would have been flawless at that point, because there's nothing else we could have gotten wrong.
Got it all out of the way.
It was simple. It was simple stuff that we could have known. For instance, at the time, we priced our books at $250. Instead of $299. Now this is $299 doesn't sound out of beyond the pale now, but this is the early 2000s. $299 was kind of at the upper edge. What we didn't take into account was that, by and large, at that point, there was no real difference to consumers between $250 and $299. I mean, that was a price point they were willing to meet.
And gas was still like $1.50.
Exactly. And bread was a nickel, and Subways were free. Shut up. And we. So we published at $250 rather than $299, not taking into account that and I can't explain the math in a podcast without a pencil and paper, but just trust me when I say the profit margin between 250 and 299 is enormous. And that would have kept us in business. But no, we were trying to be altruistic and trying to serve the consumer and trying to be the good guys publishing it at a reasonable competitive rate. What dopes. So it's, I don't know. I love how we're completely off topic, but that's okay.
It's what podcasts are for.
So, I mean, with that, you know, Kurt did okay with Shock Rockets, and Kurt actually made all six issues of Shock Rockets come out. We got, I think, issue two with Empire. The first issue sold like 50,000 copies. The second issue sold 40,000 copies. And somehow I still personally lost $25,000. No idea. Some of that has to do with we were using Image to sort of broker our stuff through, and there was some fees there. The big thing was we had a venture capitalist who had invested in us, and we did our due diligence, and he seemed like a stand-up guy, and the money was there. And then it turns out that the money wasn't there. But the guy who was brokering it and coordinating it with us didn't want to tell us the money wasn't there. So we kind of kept spinning it as if it were there. That didn't go well either. So all that is to say,
After that dark turn,
you know, blood was shed, you know, bodies were littered by the pavement. It was okay. I mean, like I said, we all came out of it okay. You know, I mean, I think the book that got hurt the most was Section Zero, because that was Carl Kiesel and Tom Grummet, and I don't think that really got off a fair shake, because by the time we got to their roll around, there wasn't much life left in Guerrilla. Anyway, the idea with Guerrilla as a collaborative publishing venture was that the first book we published was Shock Rockets, and in the back of it we had a little 8-page preview of Empire, and with Empire number one, we had an 8-page preview of something else, Crimson Plague or something like that. I don't remember. And the idea was that we would all do upsize like 40-page books with like 32 pages worth of regular content, and then use the back to promote the next guy's book, like just running a relay race and handing the baton off, which again was a good idea. With that in mind, I had written a 5-page Potter's Field one-shot that at that time was still called John Doe, because there hadn't been four other TV series named John Doe before by that time. And I had it drawn by Steve Yoel, who was great. He did Zenith with Grant Morrison years ago, and he's done a bunch of Vertigo stuff. It's really good. Five pages penciled, written, and it was written, and this will see print someday. We may even put it in the hardcover, which we're going to plug in a few minutes.
Awesome.
Because it's not a chunk of stuff you've already seen. It was essentially a pilot. It was a 5-page, here's everything you need to know about John Doe. Here's a mini adventure in 5 pages, setup, payoff, conclusion, that explains the whole concept. You know, this is where I'm going to get in trouble with these podcasts. So I'm just going to keep spilling secrets. So. So Steve Yoel did the 5 pages. They look gorgeous. They went to Carl Kiesel to ink, because Carl's a great guy, and Carl was going to jump on this. And then through a series of circumstances that have nothing to do with poor Carl. Happy 50th birthday, Carl. Carl had his 50th birthday not too long ago.
Happy birthday, Carl.
Carl's one of the most talented human beings I know.
Here's your gift from Mark Wade.
That's right. So when all is said and done, all this is to say that I don't think we still to this day know where the pages are. I'm not saying anybody went off with them. I'm just saying that in the tumult of all this stuff, everything just kind of fell through the cracks.
Was
so,
this before you guys were doing scans? Like people were Yes.
Just like, back, yes,
back
Daphna,
in the day,
back
the
in the ancient days, back in the old days, back when we helped Gutenberg
invent. Oh, like eight?
Shut up. Hit you with my walker. Back when Gutenberg invented the printing press and then came to us and said, hey, you want to do Guerrilla Comics? Yes. So we were working off pencil and paper at that point. So Steve Yoel had crappy copies. I've got some bad photocopies. It's the best we've got at this point. So, at some point we actually had, Derek Donovan do the same 5-page sequence over again. And I think that actually appeared in, I don't know if that's appeared anywhere either. We should look at that. But that exists out there. Anyway, all this to say, Wow, look at that. How much time have we eaten already?
We've eaten, like, let me touch Chip's creepy iPod.
Ew, jeez. That didn't sound weird at all.
You didn't even start.
Anyway, Flipperman's looking down here. So
it's a big number.
Anyway, all right, so to bring it back around, so what that means is that Potter's Field just sat in a drawer for a long time. So talking to Ross Ritchie after he started up Boom, what do I have to offer? What do I have that he might want to look at? And so I brought out the Potter's Field pitch, and he loved it. And so we went straight to a three-issue miniseries, which came out at the end of 2007. It was with, like I said, an artist named Paul Azaceta.
How did he come on board?
Actually, Ross and or Marshall Dillon, who was also the editor / managing production guy here, found Paul, one of the two. And I couldn't have been happier. I didn't really know his work, but then I saw Grounded, mm-hmm. which he did through Image with Mark Sable. And it's really sort of Alex Toth-y, David Mazzucchelli-ish, sort of, I don't know. I mean, that it's
pulpy but modern. It's
there you go. It's definitely, ladies and gentlemen, it's pulpy but modern. That's true. And it didn't have a superhero sheen to it, which is really important to me. It really looked gritty, and it really looked, and he did characters really well. His characters look, distinct, individual. So
he inks his own work, right?
Yes, he does. Wow. And Nick Filardi colors it, and Nick does a great job. So they're a good team. So we got them on board for that, and I couldn't have been happier with the stuff as soon as it started coming across my desk. So Paul's on board with that. We did the three issues. In retrospect, not a wise choice because you can't really do anything with three issues in terms of trade paperbacks, in terms of hardcovers. I mean, you can, but it's only 64 pages of material, mm-hmm. I guess. So that just feels thin and not something you want to charge somebody twice for. So I've been wanting to do more Potter's Field, and we had to wait until Paul's schedule opened up. He's been doing a bunch of other Marvel stuff and some other Daredevil thing.
It would fit his style.
Yes. So, hi, Paul.
We don't have time to read other comics here.
It's true. And so Paul, so we waited for Paul's schedule to open up, which it did, and Paul jumped aboard and did the one-shot with me called Potter's Field Stone Cold, which comes out in April. And that's a standalone story. It kind of picks up some of the character threads that have woven through the first part of the series, and we talk a little bit more about who this mysterious John Doe is and a little bit more of a hint of why he does what he does. And with Stone Cold, that sort of brings an end to the first act, if you will, of the Potter's Field story. And so we're going to sell Potter's Field Stone Cold in April. That's a $3.99 one-shot. And then in May, we're doing the comprehensive hardcover, oversized hardcover, which has all the Potter's Field material in it, including a lot of the stuff I've been rambling on about five pagers and backups and essays and all that stuff. So a lot of unseen material, sketch material. And that'll be in May.
Quick correction, Mark Waid is actually wrong on that one. The Potter's Field Stone Cold one-shot will be coming out in March, and the hardcover will come out in April, so keep an eye out. Do you leave any opening for a second volume or a second arc, or do you have any other stories rattling around?
I have tons of stories to do about John Doe, because again, it's the stories are only limited by
How many bodies
you can find, you know. I mean, clearly he can't solve every case, and there's going to be people who are just, they're going to be people who don't have anything really
tangible
or even terribly necessarily mysterious about their deaths. I mean, they're just, and not to put too fine a grim point on it, but there are infants who end up here too, which is sad and unfortunate, but there's not much of a trail to be found there. So we're not doing those stories because that's not much of a story there, and that's sad. Hey, Chip, edit that part out. But yeah, he's only limited by the number of bodies and by the kinds of stories. And it's New York City. It's the most colorful place in the world. So it should be, some stories can actually sort of skirt up almost with comedy, mm-hmm. or at least a very black sort of comedy. Some of them, can be real tearjerkers. Some of them we haven't really touched upon. For instance, we haven't done stories about whether it's your responsibility to pass what you know on to the loved ones. Is that something that he does? Once you find out the identity, John, do you go to the survivors and explain about where their missing person is, or, I mean, that's not
and
really...
And then what happens after?
Right.
You tell them, do they also have the right to seek vengeance, or is that just John Doe's purview?
It's... Exactly. See, or is that even what he's interested in? Is that even necessarily, does that...
Is John Doe a good guy?
Is John Doe necessarily a good guy?
Or is he just picking up dirt so he can use it for some sort of ultimate endgame?
Exactly. Or is he just so monomaniacally obsessed on this one end of the task that he's not taking into account the fact that there are responsibilities that go along with these discoveries? We will see. But that'll be in the months and years to come. Whenever Paul, as a Seta, can free up time in his schedule, he is welcome to come aboard, and we will put as much Potter's Field material out there as we can.
Awesome. Just a heads up, if you enjoyed the discussion about Potter's Field, we have the first issue up on the forums.
Good.
The Mark Waid forums opened up along with the blog, so check that out, as well as an order form for Potter's Field Stone Cold, so you don't just have to hear about it, you can read it yourself.
There you go.
Anything else you'd like to add?
I think that covers us on Potter's Field.
Thank you for joining us at the Mark Waid podcast. Come back next week for another, section. What are we calling these? Minisodes? Something obnoxious in Web 2.0-y?
Sure, minisodes.
Minisodes.
Another broadcast. Another broadcast.
A Waidcast.
Waidcast.
Thank you. Say something.
I'm done, really. Are
You're
we done
so
yet?
I'm so bad at this.
I'm really bad at this. I told you.
We're done. And then I'm going to save.